Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And Ken, there's a lot of really serious news going on.
Right.
I think it's very important that we try to deal with the real news, because so many other people who do podcasts and cable television and blog posting and all the rest, all they want to talk about is Joe Wilson and race.
Right.
So we should talk about missiles and the healthcare system. Why don't you start and tell us a little bit about the president's strategic thinking about why we can change from the large emplacements in Poland to something more of a satellite-based or some other kind of system to defend more specifically about the middle-range missiles that Iran is building?
I'd rather not. You can focus on that all you want, Ron, but of course the real discussion in Washington, the real debate, is the healthcare overhaul system bill that Max Baucus and his Gang of One,
the Gang of One,
presented. Because, you know, he spent months and months working on this compromise to get.
He negotiated with everybody.
Republicans and Democrats are all on board. The
no.
Titanic.
No, that's right. No, Max is on board. Max has produced a balanced bill, a common sense bill, one that can pass the Senate. So Max says
it delivers on the vision for meaningful healthcare reform. And I share with President Obama and millions of Americans of all stripes that goal.
He only needs another 59 votes to be able to get this
right
passed.
Well, he has one so far, right?
That's correct.
He did say, though, that there will be amendments in committee. There will be changes. And matter of fact, there will be lots of changes, apparently, because I have not heard one person who is happy with what he proposed.
There'll be a change in the weather. There'll be a change in the sea.
Yeah.
But most of all, there'll be a change in Joe Wilson, because he's been told to improve his behavior by the House of Representatives.
Admonished by basically a party-line vote, although there were 12 Democrats who said they shouldn't do this.
And 7 Republicans who said they should.
Right.
I was actually very pleased that these 19 people chose to break with their parties, irrespective of all their reasons. I just thought having this on a straight party-line vote would add only to the sort of absurd rancor and partisanship that we've descended to in the current Congress.
But it was a party-line vote, the fact that 19 out of 435.
Well, but on the other hand, Ken, we had all that very useful debate on the floor over this particular issue. For example, well, let's listen to a little bit of it.
I think it is clear to the American people that there are far more important issues facing this nation than what we're addressing right now. The president said the time for games is over. I agree with the president. He graciously accepted my apology, and the issue is over.
That was Joe Wilson, of course, and that might have been the first time that he had agreed with the president, or called him gracious for that matter, but at any rate, he expressed his own defense there, and I think a lot of people thought that was pretty compelling. Here's what Republican leader John Boehner had to say.
Never has this happened before, that we're going to bring a resolution of disapproving of his behavior. My goodness, we could be doing this every day of the week. The American people sent us here to work together to solve the problems of our country. They didn't come here to talk about our behavior.
So there seems to have been great agreement, at least among the Republicans, that this was a waste of time. But
And playing partisan politics.
But there is another issue here which may not have many receptive ears on the Republican side, but which does matter to at least some Democrats, and that is the issue of respect, disrespect for the president, either as a person or as the leader of the country. And the person who was making that point most particularly in the House was the number 3 leader in the House, Representative Jim Clyburn from the same state of South Carolina.
Now, before we hear from Jim Clyburn, remember initially Nancy Pelosi, perhaps following Barack Obama's lead, say, look, okay, let's move on. You know, he has embarrassed the House, but, you know, and he's paid a price for it, at least he's been singled out, but it's time to move on. But Clyburn, other members of the Congressional Black Caucus, said, look, we're not going to let this go. As Hank Johnson, the congressman from Georgia, said, if we ignore this, then, you know, there'll be more white shirts and white robe people around the country. A little extreme, and I think it was extreme, but the point is there are some people felt that Joe Wilson needed to be punished.
Here's a little bit of what Representative Clyburn had to say on the floor.
There are certain things that you do and certain things that you don't do. And when you do those things that you don't do, the proper thing to do is to show proper contrition.
Well, and show the proper contrition how many times might be the question, because Joe Wilson did apologize once. Then the House Democrats were insisting that he apologize again on the House floor. And whether that should have been called for or not is probably not one of the great deathless issues of this year or any other. But it does point to something that is becoming part of the September debate in this country, as it does periodically, and that is the racial question of whether we are treating Barack Obama differently as president because he is an African American.
Well, look, I think that when people show up at anti-Obama rallies with a Confederate flag,
as they did in Washington last weekend,
to me, there's undeniably a racial connotation there. But when you have Barack Obama with a Hitler mustache or with a swastika, they did that with George W. Bush too.
I think it's very hard to say that calling somebody a Nazi is in
race.
And of itself a race, particularly issue. It has more to do with power of government, tyranny. Unreasonable, emotional driven madness.
You call anybody a Nazi, that's a little far.
It is extreme, but it isn't necessarily race based.
No, I agree.
So that kind of criticism and many of the other kinds of criticism, whether they are extreme and whether they're irrational or not, that are being directed at this administration may not necessarily be tinged with a racial component. But there are many people in this country who do feel as though, as a rule, there is a racial undertone to the criticism of this administration, and that to deny it is to be naive.
Jimmy Carter had this town hall, whatever you call it, meeting this week, and he said, look, Joe Wilson's outburst was based on race and racism, and the attacks on President Obama are based on race and racism. But interestingly enough, and I guess he's done this from the beginning, President Obama will not take the bait.
Yeah.
In other words, we saw from I think maybe perhaps he felt he made a mistake with Louis Gates. Perhaps he made a mistake with you know, he was aware of the controversy with Reverend Wright. But the point is, Barack Obama, for all the talks about him being post-racial, which is my favorite cereal, by
Post-toasties.
The way. Oh, I love that. They're delicious. But sometimes too much sugar. I think that he has gone out of his way to stay out of that debate.
And
it's a no-win debate for him.
That's right. 2007, 2008, he did everything he could to de-emphasize the fact that he would be the first African-American president, to de-emphasize everything that looked like it was going to be racially polarizing. For him now to weigh in on this, he almost forgave Joe Wilson before Joe Wilson apologized. He was so eager to have this thing taken away. But not all African-Americans feel that way. A lot of people feel much more confrontational about this. They feel that the president ought to push back when he is dissed, and they feel that they themselves have something to lose in seeing this president treated with less respect than they perceive all white presidents have been treated.
Right, but Colin Powell made the point that he's less sure that it's race and more about the lack of civility in this country between the internets and the cable TV shows, both left and right, and the screaming that goes on in the town hall meetings from left and right, at this point mostly from the right. The undeniable fact, of course, is that you have an African-American president, but the lack of civility has been going on for years and it's just getting worse and worse.
I think, though, that there is something else that goes on, which is that people who want to criticize the administration and are criticizing the administration, who make a business of criticizing the administration, have leaped on this discussion and said, oh, now they're saying that if you're any kind of critic of Barack Obama at all, you're a racist. And they then can say, I'm not a racist just because I disagree with him on tax policy, health care, missile defense, what have you. And of course, disagreeing with the president on those issues does not make you a racist. But that's not really the base accusation either. The base accusation is that somehow the identity, the authority of the presidential office has been in some sense or another lowered or disrespected by some people in the media and by some people in the political argument in a way that suggests a lack of respect for a black American president.
Changing subjects a little bit, the Senate this week confirmed John McHugh, the congressman from upstate New York, as Secretary of the Army, and is now going to be a special election in that upstate district that has not, I believe, elected a Democrat in history. And yet, once again, this will probably be a referendum on the Obama administration.
There are a lot of referenda on the Obama administration that are in the offing in the weeks ahead. We've got governor's races in Virginia and New Jersey. Both of those looking good for Republican pickups, but the race is closing a little bit.
A lot of it is because of missteps by Republicans. Chris Christie in New Jersey and Bob McDonnell in Virginia.
Getting involved in controversies,
exactly.
If not necessarily missteps. Other election news in Massachusetts, we may get a senator without an election.
Well, if the Democrats have their way, and they should have their way because they have overwhelming majorities in both the House and Senate, but the Democrats want to change the law in Massachusetts the way to pick a Senate successor in the wake of Ted Kennedy's death on August 25th. Right now, the governor has the power to call a special election, and he has.
January 19th
is the general election. December 8th is the primaries, but the state legislature this week, as we speak, is likely, in my view, to change the law to give the governor, Governor Deval Patrick, the opportunity to make an interim appointment. And that interim appointee could very well be Michael Dukakis.
They are looking at different Democrats who are well-known and who would be seen as of senatorial stature, but who would not then be candidates in the December primary among the Democrats. So we expect, of course, that Deval Patrick would appoint a Democrat, and the reason they're so eager to have this happen soon is because that Democrat would be the 60th nominal vote, or perhaps potential vote, in a Senate in which all Republicans voted against Max Baucus or Barack Obama or whoever's health care bill you want to call this thing that's coming down the pike, if they do in fact get to a vote before January.
What's fascinating to me about the Senate election in Massachusetts is that I thought that when Joe Kennedy, the former congressman, the nephew of Ted Kennedy, announced that he would not run, I thought there would be an avalanche of candidates
running.
Others
would be getting in.
And more interesting are the people who are not running. Ed Markey, Marty Meehan, Stephen Lynch.
I think we thought for years that those people would
all
run
would
whenever
running.
Ted Kennedy was gone, if Ted Kennedy was ever gone, that those guys would all run for
and
sure.
Right now the Democratic field is basically down to two major candidates, State Attorney General Martha Coakley and Congressman Michael Capuano. And those are the only two so far who seem to be running.
And we've talked about Martha Coakley for as long as this has been a prospect, but Capuano, I think, is a much less well-known name outside of the Boston area.
Well, he holds the House seat that John F. Kennedy, Tip O'Neill, and Joe Kennedy held. He also envisions himself as the heir to Ted Kennedy, and I think he says, unlike Martha Coakley, who announced while Ted Kennedy's body was still warm, which is basically what he said, that I showed the proper respect and waited to the proper time before announcing my candidacy.
Now, the Democrats feel that they have a lock on this seat in Massachusetts because of the overwhelming registration advantage, but an even larger registration advantage does not seem to make a Democrat a likely winner in the race for mayor of New York City.
Not going to happen. William Thompson, who's the city controller for 8 years, I don't think we've ever mentioned William Thompson's name in the podcast, and believe me, we've mentioned a lot of names in this podcast. William Thompson, hoping to be the second African-American mayor in the history of New York.
David Dinkins.
But he won the Democratic primary, Thompson did this week, and he goes up against multi-gazillionaire Michael Bloomberg, who
has a job. Well, in fact, he is the mayor now.
And I think he was supposed to be term limited, but he didn't
law. But that was, he had to leave after two terms.
No, I didn't like that law, so I'm going to change it.
Well, somebody had to help him change it.
Well, the city council, who is afraid of Michael Bloomberg, we'll change it for you, Michael. So,
is it true that Michael Bloomberg has kept New York City safe from terrorists because the terrorists are all afraid of Michael Bloomberg?
I think Michael Bloomberg, by all accounts, he has done a very good job. He's listened to people. He's a very popular guy. But there's
this
a certain
announcement was brought to you
by
Michael
paid for
Bloomberg
by,
for Mayor Committee.
But he does have a certain arrogance, and that I don't know if that goes with being a billionaire or the fact that he's short.
This announcement was brought to you by the William Thompson for Mayor Committee.
I'm glad to see you're being bipartisan.
I am.
You are about the only bipartisan thing left in the city of Washington, D.C., except perhaps for this podcast, and that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
There's nothing more I can do but say to you, I'm sorry. Please be kind, and I know you'll find it's so easy to